And we're holding in Gittin on page 22, Ois Lamed Aleph. We learned about the destruction of Beitar and a huge number of Jews who were killed over there. So now the Gemara continues on that topic. And then again, it's kind of going and going back and forth and going around different other events that happened after the time of the Churban. Like we talked about yesterday, the Maharal talks about that all these three major things that the Gemara is dealing with over here, the Churban of Yerushalayim, the Churban of Tur Malka, and of Beitar, all of them are really like one long continuum, and therefore the Gemara can be going back and forth between one and another. Tur Malka, we said, was a large, heavily populated area of Eretz Yisrael, also known as Har HaMelech, where we said that with them there was the whole thing with the rooster and the hen, where the Romans took their rooster and their hen and they fought against them and so forth. Yeah. In fact, he points out, you know, you look at the beginning of Perek Beis of Eicha, you have the first pasuk of that Perek, begins Eicha Yorev Ve'apoy, and it continues, Hishlich Meshamayim Eretz Tiferes Yisrael, that Hashem threw down the glory of the Jewish people and didn't remember on that day of the Churban Hadorim Raglov, his footstool, which is the Beit HaMikdash. Then you have the second pasuk, Bila Hashem V'loi Chomal, which the Gemara had quoted in connection with the destruction of Tur Malka. And then the next pasuk after that, God of Achoriach, Kriyo Keren Yisrael, which the Gemara had mentioned in connection with Beitar. So he says that's the point. In other words, you have it's like an Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, one following another, and one as a direct outgrowth of the other. So the Gemara continues, Omer Rabba Baba Chana, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Arboim Sok, Tzutzei Tfilin, Ninsu Beroshei Haruge Beitar. They found 40 sa of boxes of Tfilin, the box of the Tfilin is called Ktitza, which means like cut off because each box is separate from the other one. Anyway, they found them, Nimtzu, they found Berosha Haruge Beitar on the heads of all the Jews who were killed in Beitar. 40 sa is quite a lot. We're talking about the tefillin. In other words, they wore tefillin all day long. So they found afterwards when they looked at the bodies, they were able to gather the pashtus. We mean the Romans. I don't think there were any Jews around there collecting it, but they collected a total of 40 sa of tefillin that the murdered people had been wearing.
The tefillin at the time were much smaller.
The tefillin at the time were much smaller. That's also true, yeah. So in that case, 40 saw of tefillin would come out to quite a large number of tefillin. With that said, though, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out when we compare it to the large numbers, the huge number of Jews that we said that were in Beitar before, it doesn't really seem like that much, relatively speaking. But he points out, after all, I mean, among the people in Beitar, there were women, there were children, there were people who, for one reason or another, are not putting on tefillin, for example, because they have stomach problems and they're not allowed to. And then you have not necessarily did everybody in those times wear tefillin all day long. It was primarily the Talmid Chachamim. So once you count that smaller number, then 40 sa of ketzutzei tefillin still comes out to be quite a bit. Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Shmuel, I'm a sholosh kupas shal aboim aboim sa. Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Shmuel says it wasn't just 40 sa, it was three boxes, three baskets full of 40 sa each, so a total of 120 sa. The Masnisa Tana, in a Braisa, we learn that it was divided differently. Our Boim Kupas shall Sholosh Sholosh Sin. 40 baskets, each containing 3 saw. So Rabbi Yana and Rabbi Shmuel and the Braisa are certainly not arguing. They're just saying how they were put into baskets. 3 baskets of 40 or 4 baskets or 40 baskets of 3. But either way, it comes out to 120. What about, though, doesn't it contradict what Rabbi Baba Chana said, that it's only 40 saw? So the Gemara says, Void Pligi. They're not actually arguing Hodr Resha, Hodr Dra. One's talking about the Tefillin Shal Rosh, the other's talking about the Tefillin Shal Yad. Now, Rashi points out the Tefillin Shal Rosh are larger. Now, nowadays, we don't usually have that. Usually, our Shal Yad and Shal Rosh are generally the same size. But in those times, it was because, after all, the Tefillin Shal Rosh has to have 4 compartments in it, whereas the Shal Yad only has 1. Therefore, commonly, they would make the Shal Rosh bigger. The Rambam, in fact, in Hilchos Tefillin, it was a couple of days ago, in Shalosh HaParakim, mentions that point. He says when you're making the shoyad, typically he says it would be about an etzva tall as compared to the shorosh, which would be a good deal taller than that. So therefore, so the 40 saw refers to the shoyads, and the 120 saw, however you divide it, refers to the tefillin shorosh. Now it says Beroshe, so a couple of mafoshim talk about the point. Maram Shif talks about it, other mafoshim talk about that. like this. The Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that if a person in those times, for example, when a person is wearing tefillin all day long, if he has to carry something heavy on his head, then it's not derech eretz for the tefillin to be carrying that with his tefillin on. Then what he does is he takes off the shorosh and straps it temporarily onto his arm and then wears them together that way. Because after all, mokum yesh lo niach shnei tefillin, both on the bicep and on the head, there's in principle room for two pair of tefillin, so therefore, so he would do that. So the Maharam Shift says the same way the other way around. Here they're fighting with swords, therefore they can't necessarily be wearing tefillin shoyad on their arms, so they took them off and put them on their heads. So therefore, you would actually have that that you find both the shoyad and the shorosh on their heads at that time. Although a couple of achronim, Chidah, and others talk about it, seems sort of here, and we don't really find such a din anywhere that when a person is wielding a sword, he can't be wearing tefillin. The different explanation also that's brought from the Vilna Gaon and brought from Rabbi Akiva Eger, that not so much about the word beroshe, but another reason why there would be so much of a larger volume of shorosh, of shoyads found on them than shoroshes. The idea is, when you think about it, you wear the shoyad for longer than the shorosh. You put on the shoyad first, you take it off last. Therefore, there were many people who were caught and killed by the Romans when they had on their shoyad, but did not yet have or had already taken off their shorosh, and therefore you have a volume of, because we're not talking about the total number of tefillin that were found in the city of Beit Tel, after all. We're talking about what was found on their bodies. So therefore, so in terms of what was found on the bodies, you would have had a much larger volume of, so in other words, here Rashi is saying that the larger volume is of shoroshes. According to this explanation, it's the other way around. The larger volume is of the shoyads because they would be wearing them for a longer period of time than the shoroshes. The Maharal Bechlal explains that the numbers over here, he says, are not necessarily meant literally. 40 saw, we know, is the shear of a mikveh. So therefore, he has a whole explanation that Beta represents. These are people who are on a very derhoibin level, on a very high level, beruchnius, and therefore they have a real connection with Hashem through their heads, through the tefillin, which is on the head, and therefore the Gemara specifically mentions this point about the tefillin and connection with them, and 40 saw is the shear of a mikveh, representing that they were completely immersed in their connection to Elikos. The Gemara continues, Amar of Asi, our ba kabin moyach nimsu al evan achas. At one point, they found four kavim of brains on one stone, meaning they'd pashat the goyim on the face of it. We're talking about the goyim from Babel at the time of the first base of Mikdash, although some of the Foshim explain that we're talking about after the Churban or after the destruction of Beitar. They found four kavim of brains on one stone, as in pashat, they took children and then smashed them against the rocks, and then there were brains lying over there. Ula on a test cabin. Ula says it wasn't four cabin, it was nine cabin. One explanation is, we learned a day or two ago, we talked about the enormous number of people that was a rabbin killed at the time of the Churban Bayis tradition. We had 940,000 in the Azara and 2 million plus in a valley near Yerushalayim. The ratio between those numbers is approximately 4 to 9. So therefore, so it would be that when among the ones that were killed in or near the Beis Mikdash, then you had four cabin, and then in that other area you had nine, so both of them would be true. Amar of Kahana v'itema Shila bar Mori. So Rav Kahana, or some say Shila bar Mori, said, "My Kra, where's a pasuk that we see that the Babylonians were doing this kind of thing, smashing children on rocks?" The pasuk says in Al Maris Bavel, "Bas Bavel Hashduda, you daughter of Bavel, who's going to be robbed, who's going to also be captured and then despoiled by your enemies. Ashrei she shalom loch v'gam, happy is the one, fortunate is the one who will pay you back like the way you did to us." And the pasuk finishes off, "Ashrei she yoriches, how fortunate will be the one who grabs the nipitzas of Eliach al asola and smashes your children against the rocks." So we understand if we're saying shagamalt lanu, then we understand they did it to us, and therefore David HaMelech in this capital is saying there'll come the time when you'll have that happen to you as well. And fortune is the nation that does that. So we see that they were actually doing that, that they were partially doing that, and that's how you come to have brains on these brain tissue on the rocks over there. One thing is, you know, that Rebbe used to point out a lot of times when people would talk about the idea that, you know, people would say, you know, all you need in the world is science, technology, and everything. You don't need a belief in the Eberstein. That Rebbe would often point out, you know, look at Germany, look how so-called cultured and civilized they were, and look what barbaric things they did. Here we have, the Gemara is telling us the same kind of thing. Babel in those times was also a great center of world culture and chokhmah and everything like that, and yet we're saying over here, look how barbaric and how how animal-like they were.
It's different numbers, 40 or 120. Are they based on psukim?
So they're not specifically based on psukim. So that's what I'm saying. So most of the Mefarshim don't deal with these with what these numbers mean. Most of them seem to take it literally. The Maharal in particular, right? So the Maharal in particular goes into an explanation with each one in general. With all agadis with numbers, he usually goes into an explanation of what the numbers signify. He explains before he had explained in connection with Beitar that a lot of things within connection. He learns that this business about the brains is also in connection with Beitar, and again he connects it with this idea that they had a high level of connection to the Eibishter through on the head level, and therefore we talk about the tefillin and the brain specifically in connection with them. And so he explains that the four is the basic number that represents Beta in the sense of this very fortified city in all four directions. So therefore the number four is used over and over in connection with it. We had also the number of Jews who were killed there. The Gemara had said 4 million or 40 million. Also four in some order of magnitude. That's the Gemara had mentioned, yeah, 4 million or 40 million. There is a possibility, I think Ben Yehoyada brings up the possibility that maybe the numbers are meant more along the lines of not so much literally there were 40 million Jews in Beitar at that time, but rather if they had lived, then by now you would have, there would be millions of descendants of theirs. That's the question. So that's one way of, so again, one way the Maharal understands that these numbers are meant more symbolically and not literally. And then Ben Yehoyada talks about that it means that, in other words, if they had lived, then over the time they would have had that number of descendants. You know, I've mentioned in this shiur something before. I've mentioned a point that Beryl Wine says in one of his books. He says, you know, at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, Josephus tells us in his histories there were approximately 10 million Jews in the world. Based on records from those times also, there were approximately that number of Chinese in the world also. Well, fast forward now to our times, and you have well over 1 billion Chinese. How many Jews do we have, Lahabdil? Come 15 million, you know, many times it was less than that. So, like, we've barely grown in 2,000 years. That's what it means when you talk about the casualties of Golos, when we talk about all of that, it's all included. In other words, we would have been, Taka, an enormous nation had it not been for these kinds of, it's not like the Chinese didn't have over the years their troubles as well, but in other words, theirs are not anywhere near on the same scale as ours, and that's what it means. That's yeah. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel, among his nevuos of Nechama, he talks about how after Mechamas Gog and Magog, finally once and for all, everybody will realize that the Eibishter runs the world, and everybody will realize when the Jewish people are taken out of Golus, what Golus was all about. And he uses the expression over there. He says that during the time of Golus, Vayiplu b'cherev kulam, he says all of them fell by the sword. We literally see this over and over in these stories, how much over and over that happened in Golus, and how. We really are. The Rebbe always talked about, you know, ud mutzel me'esh. We're like a burning piece of wood plucked out of the fire at the last moment. Yeah. So the Maharal says that there's the four and the nine over here. Also, respectively, he finds symbolism in it. Four representing the perfection of Beitar as a strong, fortified city. Nine, he talks about, has to do with Chochmah, and it was a city full of Chochmah. So, yeah. The Gemara continues, the Pasuk in Eicha says, Bnei Tzion Hayakorim, the precious children of Tzion, Hamsuloyim Bapoz, who are Msuloyim with Poz. Now, Paz, whatever, is a type of very precious gold. So we have to ask, my Msuloyim Bapoz, what does that Pasuk mean? Does it mean that the people of Yerushalayim were covered and bedecked with gold? And then in that case, we would understand the word misuloyim as related to the Shurdish Sola, Sin Samach Lamed Hay, which means like a paved road. So it means like they were covered and paved over with gold, with paz. Can't be. Va'ami Dveirav Shila, they said. And Maharsha points out, it can't mean that they're more precious than gold, because then the expression is, should be Hamasuloyim Mipoz. So Ba-Poz suggests that they're Misuloyim through Paz. So what does that mean? Does it mean that they're bedecked with Paz? No, Va'ami Dvei Rav Shila, they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Shila, Tauti Maskeli Astiri Pizi Nochus Ba'alma. Two measures of an Istira is a small coin, of Paz came down in the world. Chodeh B'Romi V'Chodeh B'Kol Alma. One went to Rome, and one went to the whole rest of the world combined. So therefore, it's impossible that an Astira is a smallish coin. So therefore, it can't be that there would have been enough paths in the world for the people of Yerushalayim to be bedecked with it. Ela, shohoyim aganas apoz v'yoifyon. Rather, misaloyim b'apoz means that they're as beautiful and bright as Paz is, they would put it to shame with their beauty. So therefore, Misaloyim is still from the same shoulder, Samach Lamed Hey, which means to tread down or to pave over. Rashi points out, yeah. So you have the pasuk for not so much to pave over, but rather Meloshim like you have Soilu Loroicha Barovis. You have praise Hashem who rides above the heavens, or Loisus Sula Bekesim Oifer. You can't compare the greatness of Torah even the best quality gold from Ophir won't compare to the Chochmah of Torah. So we see that the Shorter Samach Lamed Hey, or Samach Lamed Aleph in this case, means to compare. Sam Soloyim Bapaz, you couldn't even compare Paz, this precious gold, to them. They were more beautiful than that. So the Gemara says, what are those? So the Romans took advantage of that. Mi'ikra, originally, before the Churban, Havu Chashibi Dereimoi Nakti Bilyone de Gushpanka, the Choshev of Romans, when they were having relations with their wives, they would hold onto their signet rings, which had pictures on them of beautiful pictures, or Masham Shiar Sayo, and they would have relations. As we know in the case with Yaakov and the sticks with the sheep, and we have various other examples in Midrashim, what a couple sees or thinks of when they're having relations has a very powerful influence on their child. So therefore, they'd want to be looking at beautiful images while they're having relations so that their children would have that same kind of beauty. Mikan ve'elach, now after they had taken Jews captive, after many Jews had been taken captive, after Churban Bayis Sheni, Maisu Bnei Yisrael, they would take Jews, va'asri v'kari jipurayu, and tie them to the legs of their beds, or mashamshi, and then they would have relations. So this way they can stare at the beauty of the Jewish young men and women while they're having relations. So that's what we're saying. The Soloyim Bapaz, that they would put the beauty of Paz to shame, where originally they would use their Paz on their signet rings as their model to look at, and now instead they're using Jews for that purpose. So one time, Omalei Chav L'Chavre, one of these Jews who was in this situation, asks the other one, Ha Heichak Siva, where does it say in the Torah that such a thing is going to happen, such a degrading and disgusting thing? Omalei, so he answers him with a pasuk from the Toichacha in Parashat Kisavei. Gam kocholi v'chol maka. Also, every sickness and every blow, asher lekosur v'sefer haTorah azos, that is not written in this sefer Torah, is going to happen to you. So meaning, in other words, he's saying that this is the kind of thing. The Torah doesn't want to mention such a thing explicitly because it's so disgusting, but the Torah is hinting by these words, asher lekosur v'sefer haTorah azos, that they're going to be this kind of thing that even though it can't be mentioned in the Torah, but then, nevertheless, the Torah doesn't want to mention explicitly such a devout gnai, but nevertheless, it hints at it with this pasuk. Omar, so the first one who asked the question said, "Kama marchikna miduch de plan? How far away am I from that place in Torah?" Meaning, I'm not familiar with that pasuk. Maharsha explains that the one who had asked the question to begin with had only learned so far Chumash Vayikra. In fact, we have, you know, here we're now in Parshas Vayikra, and famously the Medrash says that you start by teaching children with Chumash Vayikra, as we do nowadays when we bring kids for Achnasa L'cheder. So he had learned Vayikra, and he had learned the Toichacha in it. He wasn't aware even that there's a Toichacha in Chumash Devarim, and he hadn't known of this pasuk from there. So he's asking, how far am I from it? I haven't gotten to that yet. Omalei, so the other one tells him, Ingid, not very much, only a little bit. Pusto Palga, only 1.5 dafim, 1.5 columns in the Sefer Torah, and then you would reach that pasuk. Omalei, so the first one answers, Imatori Legabe, if I had reached that pasuk, Loyit Surichiloch, then I wouldn't have needed to ask you because I would have understood on my own that that's what the pasuk is hinting at. So still, why is he using such an expression? I wouldn't have needed you. So I throw a couple of explanations about what the Gemara means to convey with this story. One is that the fact is, Ben Chomesh Shanim L'Mikra, Ben Esther Shanim L'Mishnah. This boy, however old he was, the pastors, he was old enough to already have learned all of Chomesh. So how comes it that he doesn't know Chomesh Devarim and he has to ask? So one point is that there was a problem in those days and then in later times also with Gaiva, where people start thinking that they're capable of learning much more advanced topics in Torah than they really are, and that causes them to neglect the fundamentals. The Maharal, for example, in his times was very much against that. He the Mishnah says clearly Ben Chomesh Shana L'Mikra and only Ben Esther Shana L'Mishnah, whereas he writes in some of his Sfarim, you know, it's a real problem. He says that in our times, people start learning Gemara at very young ages and they're not really ready for it yet because they haven't mastered the basics. So therefore, one idea would be, in fact, he set up a cheder there in Prague where the Taka followed exactly the curriculum of the Mishnah. Anyway, so one explanation is that the Gemara wants to highlight the gaiva that they had over there, where he was saying, if I'd reached there, I wouldn't have needed you, as if to say, well, that bears out in the first place why he didn't know this pasuk, because he hadn't learned in the proper order because of this gaiva thinking that he can go at a different in a different order than Chazal told us. That's one explanation I saw. Another one is that he's saying, look, the Teuchacha, on the face of it, the things in the Teuchacha are going to happen in order. Now, this pasuk, Gam Kol Choli V'Chol Makah, is near the end of the Teuchacha. So how could it be that now, at the beginning of the Golos, we're already experiencing this pasuk? So the other boy tells him, you know what, listen, it's only a page and a half into the Teuchacha, meaning the Teuchacha is not that long, so it's very possible for things to happen like that. So the first one tells him, I don't know about that. If I was there, Imota L'Gabei, if I was living in a later generation, and this happened, then yeah, I could attribute it that it's from that pasuk. But now that we're living now at the beginning of the Golos, I find it hard to accept that this is the fulfillment of this pasuk. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rav Shimon Gamliel, my dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk says, another pasuk in Eicha, "Eini oyla lo l'nafshi mikil b'nois iri." My eye is wounding or is hurting my soul more than all the other daughters in my city. Or mikol can also mean because of all the daughters, because of all the children of my city. What does that mean? Says Rav Shimon Gamliel. Arba meyetz batik nesias hoy beklach beter. In that one city of Beter, there were 400 shuls. Over chol achas achas hoy betof melamdi tinoikas. Every shul had in it 400 melamdim. Over chol achad achad hoy lefan of tof tinoikas shabbos rabban. And each melamed had 400 students. Now, how comes that? A number of mafoshim point out that the fact is, the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, a class is not supposed to be bigger than 25. Otherwise, the Malamed can't teach them effectively. So, in fact, Ion Yaakov says over here that maybe that's why, maybe the Gemara wants to highlight the point over here that in fact they weren't spending enough money on chinuch. That as great as they thought that fine, we can manage one teacher with 400 students, so we don't have to pay for more Malamdim, and that was a problem. On the other hand, other Mephoshim point out different other possibilities. Rav Yaakov Emden says it might have been that they learned in shifts, or maybe other Mephoshim point out the teachers may have had assistants. Whatever the case, so you had an enormous number of cheder children in that one city of Beit. Again, 400 times 400 times 400, so you're talking in the hundreds of thousands. So if the enemy would have come in there, then the children would pierce him with their styluses. They have tablets in front of them, like wax tablets or wooden tablets or whatever, on which they would scratch out. That was the normal way of writing then, is they had that would scratch out the letters of what they're learning and what they're writing. So these styluses are sharp. They have sharp points. They could use them. There were so many children that they could go and overpower any enemy that came in there. But then when the enemy became powerful, when the Romans did invade the city, capture the city and invade it, because then on the contrary, all that learning Torah and all of those sharp styluses didn't help them. They wrapped up all those children in their own svarim that they were learning from and burnt them in fire. So again, according to Ion Yaakov in particular, it's a punishment for the fact that in that city they failed to give enough weight to teaching cheder children, and they didn't spend enough money on them, and they're saying, fine, one teacher can have hundreds of students and we don't care. According to everybody else, not necessarily is anybody there doing anything wrong as far as that goes, but we're saying there was a gzeira min hashamayim on the city of Beitar, and therefore even the cheder yinglach were killed in it. We talked about a few days ago also, we talked about that the Medrash mentions that actually there were people in Beitar who, when Yerushalayim had been destroyed 52 years earlier, some people actually celebrated it, because there were people, the Medrash describes, there were people from Beitar and other towns who had gone to Yerushalayim back when the Bais HaMikdash was standing. They had gone there on Aliyah L'Regel, and the people, again, some people in Yerushalayim had cheated them or otherwise taken advantage of them. They also had the Medrash mentions the people of Yerushalayim were great Chachamim, so they were very good at outwitting people. So now, when the Bais HaMikdash was destroyed, there were some people who took the view, they got what they deserved, we should be happy for it. That was a contributing factor to the fact that they themselves eventually were destroyed. I mentioned the other day something the Maharal says about this. He says, again, we have these three things, he says, are connected, the Churban of the Bais HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, of Tur Malka and a Beitar. He says Yerushalayim is like the heart, and Tur Malka and Beitar are like the arms. If the arms are disconnected from the heart, what happens to them? The Gemara goes on, Tana Abanan, Maisa Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya Shaholach L'Krach Godol Shabirimi. It happened once that Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, this is the regular Rabbi Yeshua in Shas, went to the great city of Rome after the Churban. Omruloi, they told him, Kinik Echad Yesh Bebeis Asurim. There's a young boy in the jail, Yefei Einayim, he's beautiful of appearance, the beautiful eyes, the Toiv Roy, and then nice in appearance, Ukvutsois of Sturis Leitautalim, and his curls of hair are arranged in rings around his face. So in other words, the point is, he's a very beautiful, handsome child, and therefore there's the real problem. We talked yesterday about the 400 boys and girls who were being taken on ships for Koloin, where they were going to be taken, the boys for Mishkav Zohar and the girls for concubines. So now there's the real concern that this boy also, he's so handsome that the Romans are going to use him for that purpose as well. Holach v'omar al Pesach beis asurim. So Rabbi Yeshua went and stood by the entrance to the jail to see what he could do. Dodos of Rishonim, by the way, points out, it's not like Rabbi Yeshua went to Rome and only he found out about this one kid. This was right after the Churban. We're talking about Rabbi Yeshua was sent with money for bribes and for ransoms and whatnot to try and see however many Jews he could free who had been taken as captives to Rome. So he has people, he's in touch with people, he's in touch with Jews all over the city, and one of them came and told him about this boy who's in jail. Omar, and Rabbi Yeshua starts quoting the Pasuk, Mi nosan l'mshisa Yaakov v'Yisrael l'voizes him. Who is it that gave Yaakov over to be despoiled, to be plundered? V'Yisrael, and Yisrael l'voizes him, which is another word for plunderers. So that's how the Pasuk says, Mi nosan l'mshisa Yaakov v'Yisrael l'voizes him. It's half of a Pasuk. Ona oise tinek v'Omar, the child answered back. He heard Rabbi Yeshua's voice, and he answered from inside the jail with the continuation of the pasuk. Haloi Hashem, isn't it Hashem? Zu chatonu loy, that we sinned against him. V'loi ovu b'drochav haloich, they did not want to go in his ways. V'loi shomu b'seirosei, and they did not listen to Hashem's Torah. So he completed the pasuk that Rabbi Yeshua had started. Omar, Rabbi Yeshua says, Muftachani boy shemoda hayra b'Yisrael. I am certain about this boy that he's going to grow up to be somebody who's going to be able to paskin halacha for the Jewish people. Somebody he has the makings of a great Talmud Chacham. We'll talk about it in a second. A lot of different reasons that all the Mephoshim are bothered by the question. Okay, so he completed a pasuk. What's the big deal? We'll talk about it in a minute. There were many, many fascinating explanations of what it was, but whatever. He was very impressed by him. Ha'avoida. So he says, I swear by the avoida in the Beis Mikdash, she'eni zoz mikan, that I'm not going to move from here, ad she'efdenu b'chomokim she'bohomomim she'poskin olam. I'm going to ransom him no matter how much money they demand for him. Tosfos points out that now earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara talks about, we talked about this a couple of weeks back, that you have a din, midrabanan, that you're not supposed to ransom captives for more than they're worth because you don't want to encourage the goyim to do this kind of thing again and again. So how could he do it over here? So first of all, Tosfos says here there's a sakonis nefoshis involved over here. Second of all, Tosfos says because he was muflug b'chachma, Rabbi Yeshua saw, as we'll talk about soon, about how he's unusually wise and therefore such a person, then it's worthwhile to ransom him for even more than it's worth. For even more than he would be worth. There are various other explanations that Mephoshim give. Another one is, look, it's in order not to encourage the Goyim to do this again and again. But here we're talking about the time of the Churban. They don't need any encouragement. As it is, they're grabbing every yid that they can get. So therefore, there's no problem with that you're going to encourage them to do the same thing again because it's that kind of situation. Anyway, sure enough, the Lord heard you, so sure enough, Omru, they said, Rabbi Yeshua did not leave there before he ransomed this child for a lot of money. Sure enough, not long past before he was passing halacha and teaching Torah to the Jewish people, Umanu Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. This is Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. This is the regular Rabbi Shmuel in Shas, the Bar Plugta of Rabbi Akiva. He was this boy. So some say, on the face of it, if he's a child at the time of the Churban, then he can't very well have been a Kohen Gadol. Mephoshim discussed that a lot. Of course, there is a possibility that maybe this happened before the Churban, maybe at some point before that, where Jews were taken captive to Rome. But most of the Mephoshim seem to understand that, no, we're talking after the Churban, and in that case, it would be his grandfather was Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. He himself was not a Kohen Gadol because he was a boy at the time of the Churban, but he was still from the family of Kohenim Gadolim. But yeah, we're going to have soon the story of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha's two children who were taken captive. So yeah, one explanation is that you have the grandfather of Shmuel ben Elisha was the Kohen Gadol, and his two children, his son and daughter, were taken captive at the time of the Churban. And then in addition, you have his grandson who was here, the Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha of our story. Now, so what was it that impressed Rabbi Yeshua so much about that he answers with the second half of the pasuk? So first of all, I mean, on a Balbakisha level, just, you know, and some Mephoshim say this, Pashut the fact that, you know, look at the situation that he's in, where he's in danger, he's separated from his family, who knows what's going to happen to him, and he's not complaining or anything, he's accepting the Din Shamayim on himself. That itself is a very great thing, and that impressed Rabbi Yeshua a lot. Marshall points out that there is a detail in the pasuk. Why levoizes zim, the double expression, and why the double expression at the end of the pasuk? So he says, in other words, because you have two types of mitzvahs. You have mitzvah sichlius, and then you have the mitzvahs. You have the chukim. So the pasuk is saying that we violated both of those, and therefore Hashem gave us over to boizizim, to not only plunderers, but plunderers of plunderers, bazuzi or bazuzi di bazuzi, like it says at the end of Ksuvos. Anyway, so there's a lot of different explanations what exactly was so great about his answer. The Rif talks about over here like this, that you have in the pasuk Yisrael versus Yaakov. So that implies, in other words, that Rabbi Yeshua is saying the first half of the pasuk, and the boy is answering that we see the pasuk is telling us that ein ra yodin milamayla. But we're saying, in other words, that we're saying on the one hand there's Yisrael, the higher level Jews, the chachamim and all, and then you have Yaakov, you have the simple people. So you have the Yisrael were not acting the way they're supposed to, and therefore the Yaakov learned from them, and therefore both of them ended up in trouble. So he's answering with that point, realizing that there is that difference, that the Chachamim are responsible for what happens in the generation, and that was a very important point, which Rabbi Yeshua appreciated and said, for that reason, I can see that he's going to be murder her all Yisrael. Among the many, many other explanations, there's Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz gives a couple of interesting ones. One of them is where the point where Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya stopped in the pasuk is not the middle of the pasuk. The middle of the pasuk where the esnacha is actually on the word Haloi Hashem. So he stopped by the words Minos on the Meshisa Yaakov. Yisrael voices him as if to say, we have to ask, is this kind of thing? Is it that Hashem is specifically making this happen, or is it basically more that Hashem took away His protection from us, and therefore b'derech hateva, then we end up being plundered and being taken captive and all? And there's kind of a nachkamina in it. Should we taka go and spend extra money to take people out of jail, or should we say that din shamayim and we can't? So therefore, when the boy answers by putting Haloi Hashem, Zu Chatonu Loi, by putting that all together, he's stressing the point that no, this is not something that just Hashem took away his protection, and therefore it's not that Hashem specifically said we need to be in jail. It's rather Hashem took away his protection, and B'derech HaTeva, therefore we're in jail. Well, therefore you need to work against the B'derech HaTeva, and you need to go and ransom me. So in other words, the way that he parsed the pasuk told Rabbi Yeshua that he understands this point, that there's a difference, that he understands and he appreciates this point, that there's a difference between something that Hashem does directly versus something that Hashem does sort of more indirectly by allowing things to happen, sort of. Rabbi Yonasan goes and gives a different explanation also. That it has to do with the Gemara tells us elsewhere that in Yerushalayim, one problem before the Churban was that they acted only exactly according to the letter of the law, and not Mufnim Meshuras Hadin. So the boy is telling Rabbi Yeshua by answering with the rest of the pasuk, Allah Hashem Zuchaton Eloi, don't you realize, Rabbi Yeshua, this is exactly the same mistake we made in Yerushalayim, acting exactly according to the letter of the law. You need to go Mufnim Meshuras Hadin, and you need to ransom me, even if the regular din would say not to. L'mayim L'mitam B'das, basically. Then there's a fascinating explanation from Reb Simcha Bunim of Pshischa. He says another problem that they had in Yerushalayim in those times before the Churban is that people sometimes were taking on themselves an avodah, a type of avodah that's not appropriate for them, but rather would be appropriate for somebody else. You know, you have a story the Frida Kadeva tells about Neshama Satoyas. He has a whole story over there about a gvir and a balagola, where one time the gvir is trying to help somebody schlep his wagon out of the mud, and he's not helping anything with it because that's not what he knows how to do. Meanwhile, the balagola invites a whole bunch of people to be his urchim for Shabbos, Yes, and he bitterly has any food for them when both of them come to the base in Shamayla. It turns out they're being told, you're Neshama Satoyas, each of you did the avodah that would have been appropriate for the other one. You need to come back down to earth again and fix things up. So therefore, so he says, so the Simcha Bunim says, here in Yerushalayim, they have the same kind of problem. So therefore, the boy is telling Rabbi Yeshua, you're standing over here and you're krechting and davening. That's not the kind of avodah we need from you right now. You're here, you're supposed to be doing Pidyon Shavuyim. You have with you a lot of money for Pidyon Shavuyim. Get to work. So,
this Ma'amar of the Rebbe.
Which Ma'amar of the Rebbe? What? The Ma'amar of the Tamadas, yeah. So you have those, and you have many, many, many other reasons that are brought among various Mephoshim, what exactly he was saying, what exactly he was expressing with this half of the Pasuk, and what, one more Balabatish explanation that's brought from Rav Shlomo Pfluger, I think, is that Pasuk, there's a halacha, you're not supposed to divide a Pasuk in half. So Rabbi Yeshua had said only half a Pasuk, so therefore the boy realized it's important to not just let the Pasuk hang over there, you have to complete the Pasuk. And so Rabbi Yeshua says, I realize for that, he's going to murder Rabbi Yisrael if he realizes that we have to be careful even about such a halacha that many people might overlook. The Gemara goes on, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Mais b'bnei w'bitei shor Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, it happened once with the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, shenishvu l'shnei adonim, they were captured by two different goyim. Again, this is not necessarily the same Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha as the previous story. It might be the same one, and in that case, then this story would have happened after the destruction of Beitar, or it might be it was the grandfather of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, and in that case, it's his children at the time of the Churban. Anyway, l'yomim nizdavgu shneim, eventually the two goyish masters met up, but Mokam Echad in one place. Ze'oimer, one of them says, yeshli ebed shen kiyofi b'chol ha'olam, I have a slave, there's no equal of his beauty in the entire world. And the other one says, yeshli shivcha shein b'chol ha'olam kula kiyofra. I have a maidservant, that's a slave girl, that there's nobody in the world like her beauty. They didn't realize, of course, that's brother and sister. Omru, they said to themselves, Boiv and Asiyim Zelazeh, come, let's marry them off one to another, Unachalik Bavlodis, and we'll divide up the children, because we'll have more slave children, and each of us will get half. Tichnusim Lacheder, so they brought them into a room. Each one is sitting in an opposite corner of the room. The boy was saying, Ani koyen ben koyenim gdolim. I'm a koyen, I'm descended from koyenim gdolim. Esa shivcha. How would I marry a slave woman? And she's saying, Ani kehenes bas koyenim gdolim anosala eved. Could I possibly marry an eved? Now, one thing is, Ion Yaakov points out that they themselves, how do they not realize at least that they're fellow Jews? It may be, he says, that actually they themselves didn't want to tell their Goyish captors that they are Jews in the first place, because then there's more of a chance that the Goyim are going to want to rape them or who knows what. So therefore, they may have pretended, in order to keep themselves out of that kind of danger, and they may have pretended that they're a pack of plain old slaves and maidservants, and that way at least they'd be safe from that kind of thing. But now, therefore, they truly don't know. The Gemara continues, Uvochu kol alayla, they were crying there in the room all night. Kivin sha'ola omer ha-shachar, then when dawn broke, he kid was zeh zeh, there was enough light, they recognized one another, v'naflu zal zeh, and they fell on one another with go with chia, and they burst into tears, ad sheyotze nishmasen, until their neshamas left them, and they both passed away. V'alein koinin yumiya, Yumiya says about them, in Echal, Ela ani v'chia, for these I cry, and v'chia means not just crying, but I'm continuously crying. Eini, eini, yodamayim, my eye is shedding tears. One point is, the Gemara tells us in Brachas that a brother and sister can be compared to two eyes. The Gemara tells us over there of a Tzduki, I think it was, who tells one of the Chachamim that I had a dream where I saw my two eyes kissing one another, and the Chacham tells him means that you were Mizana with your sister. So therefore, Eini Eini refers very much to a brother and sister over here. Also, Marsha points out, the word Bechia means can literally be understood as I cry for her. So therefore, it means this is a boy talking and saying, I cry for her, for my sister. And then another Yumiya is saying that I'm crying, both of my eyes, Yodamayim, for these kosher children. Marsha also points out, you know, you have the previous psukim as well, that also hint at the other parts of the story. You have the pasuk before it, Kora olay moyed lishva bachurai. The pasuk says, Hashem called against me a moyed, an appointed time, to break my young men. So therefore we have Kora olay moyed, that Hashem caused that these two goyish captors met up with one another, and lishva bachurai, and gas dorach Hashem, l'psulas bas Yehuda. You have in the pasuk, the bachurai and b'sulas, as in the boy and girl of the story. We have one of the Kinyas on Tisha B'Av that we say is about this, is a poetic retelling of the story. There's a Lozman Rebbe Lozman Dayo who did Trova and he was crying until he died. Yeah, yeah. Apparently, such a thing happens. I guess I don't know. The Ramami Fano talks about Bechlau with a number of the figures in these stories in the Gemara. He talks about who they were Gugulim of and who they were the Tikkun of. In this case, if I remember correctly, he says that this brother and sister over here are the Tikkun of Amnon and Tamar. The last time around, Amnon had done very badly to Tamar, so now instead they have another chance and they fix that up. Now on to topics of Geula, which are much happier. So Beis Nissen being the Yom Hilula of the Rebbe Rashab. So the famous Sticha, Beis Nissen, Tavshin Memches, you actually have excerpts of it posted on the walls of 770 that the Rebbe was talking about. We have to increase the Chaim of the Nasi through that we announce Yechi HaMelech. And this is why now in Ipvus and in Meshicha, we're making such a shurim about saying Ad Masai, which also brings the Geula closer. So it's not just that we're stressing with that, how much we're looking forward and how much we're asking and demanding that the Geula should come. But Poyo Mamash, there's also, when we make such an announcement, we're also in effect doing the crowning, the coronation of the king, like you have when kings in Tanakh were coronated and we say Yechi HaMelech, and that way we actually bring about the coming of David Malka Mashiach. So therefore, so we have to ma'aseh u'ikar, we have to finish ma'aseinu v'avodaseinu, and that includes also demanding and asking ad mosai and announcing Yechi HaMelech, David Malka Mashiach, with the greatest zrizus and with simcha and with chayus. Continuing on halachas of tchumen and eruv tchumen, so we talked about that you use 2 meals worth of food, either 2 meals worth of bread or 2 meals worth of something that would be eaten together with the bread, and you put it down in the place where you need the eruv. Now you can send it with somebody else to put it on your behalf. The shliach will make the bracha, and he'll say when he says the nusach, instead of saying that I will be mutter to go 2,000 amos from this spot, instead he'll say the nusach that Pliny will be mutter to go. The shliach, though, does have to be an adult and a bar das. You can't send it with a child. And we have a concept called chazaka shliach osa shlichosei. So even if he doesn't return and report back that he actually placed it, you can rely on the fact that he did. If you find out that he didn't, then you don't have an eruv, unless it was placed there before Shachas. Now, you can also make one eruv tchumen for many people, as long as you have enough food for each one. So you have a bunch of people who are going to be walking from one bungalow colony to another or whatever, and you have to make sure you have 2 sudas or lift done for 2 sudas for each one. In that case, then you'd have to be mezaket to them through somebody else, just like you do by eruv chatzeros. Now, unlike eruv chatzeros, which you can make for a person without his das, because that's an example of zochen la'odim, shalai b'fanav, with eruv tchumen you can't. Because after all, with Erev Tchumen, like we talked about earlier, what you gain in one direction, you're losing in the other direction. So therefore, so a person may not want that. So you have to tell them before Shabbos begins that you put the Erev before them. If you're putting it for a bunch of people, then you say that it'll be mutter for Pliny and Pliny, or myself and Pliny, etc. There is, by the way, a din in there because Erev Tchumen is Derabbanan. You have certain things that it talks about in the Gemara over there that you don't have to decide in advance who should be included in the Erev. You can have, for example, that you tell them, you decide later on who it's going to be, and it works for Mafreya on grounds of Brera. One example of that is, let's say you're in camp, you have a counselor wants to take his bunk someplace, depending how they're behaving in Shabbos competition. So, practically speaking, you won't know, of course, before Shabbos who's going to be going and who's not, but that's fine because he had it retroactively, we say, Mitzad Breira, it works. Another din, the Eruv has to be located in a place where you would be able to get to it and eat it, Ben HaShmoshes, without doing an Issur Daraisa. So say, for example, you put it in a hole in the ground and cover it with dirt, no good, because then you can't dig up the dirt on Shabbos. But if you cover it with a rock, that's fine, because moving a rock is only muksa d'rabbanan, and that for this purpose, you could do bein hashmoshes. Then you have, let's say you put it in a tree. If it's a stiff tree, then fine. The concept of using a tree and climbing on it on the Shabbos, the issur of that is only d'rabbanan, so you're fine. But if it's a shaky or weak tree, then it's not a valid eruv, because then it's not really in a particular place. And another din, if you put it inside a city, then that city is counted as a place of the Eruv, so then you can go throughout that city or throughout that whole bungalow colony or whatever, and it's Chum Shabbos beyond it, because then it's basically considered as though you live in that city. So say, for example, you know, you have bungalow colony A, B, and C, so you put it, you're staying in A, you put it in B, which is within 2,000 Amos, then fine, for that Shabbos, it's considered as though you live in bungalow colony B, and now you can walk that entire place, the entire colony and the 2,000 Amos beyond it in the other direction. Okay.